This podcast was recorded Thursday, July 21st at 10:37 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like an election denier will run to be Ohio's elections chief.
Oh, that's already happening.
Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics in those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians like Trips Ahore Tory Maris, the independent candidate running for Secretary of State, who says Trump won in 2020.
Okay. Anyway, coming up in the podcast, every one of the legislative districts Ohioans are voting in this year is illegal. That's at least according to the Ohio Supreme Court.
Yeah, what does that court know about the law? Anyway, we begin this week with J.D. Vance.
J.D. Vance, that's right. The Trump-endorsed venture capitalist and best-selling author who was running for U.S. Senate. He's been laying low since his big primary victory in May.
Yeah, as we approach August, we have not seen him. Maybe J.D. stands for just disappeared.
Ooh.
No big campaign events, no TV commercials, hardly a media appearance. He has basically disappeared from public view.
J.D., where did you go? Many suspected he was using this slow period in any campaign to raise money, much of that done in private. But that does not appear to be the case at this point.
Yeah, the second quarter campaign finance report came out last week. It shows Vance raised a mere $2.3 million. That's less than a third of what his Democratic opponent raised. Tim Ryan raised $9.1 million during that period.
It's a lot of cash. Ryan is spending lots of money as well, some $10 million on TV ads, campaign mailers, and digital advertising.
And while Ryan has $3.5 million in the bank, Vance only has about $630,000, and Vance has loaned his campaign $700,000. He's broke.
A struggling campaign at this point?
No, I don't. He's just not raised money yet.
Yeah.
The money will come, but it's raised some eyebrows. I mean, there was some chatter among Republicans that they were wondering where J.D. Vance was. Tim Ryan has been on TV a lot, basically promoting himself, and now he's turned to criticizing J.D. Vance. And some Republicans are wondering, especially like the talk radio host, wondering where he is and if he's laying too low.
You say the money will come. When does the money come? It seems pretty late in the cycle.
Yeah, I mean, this is a slow period. Summertime is a slow period. Usually it's the time when you're holding fundraisers. You're going, and they're generally private. They're in hotel ballrooms.
Rubber or chicken dinners
or
and shaking hands.
You know, big supporters' homes and things like that. But according to the campaign finance reports, there's been no direct campaign fundraising for his campaign. Now, he's got his PAC out there and you know, Vance's campaign says it is only July, and campaigns are not won and lost in July.
Peter Thiel, the eBay founder, the PayPal guy, he's given Vance a lot of money, gave him $10 million. Is he going to step in at this point, or does it seem to be more organically raised, kissing baby kind of fundraising? Or I don't even know if that happens anymore. I suppose it really doesn't.
Well, most of Ryan's donors have been the small donors, you know, a few hundred bucks or less.
More the Democratic model,
yeah,
generally.
Peter Thiel, he told, or CNN reported back in May, that Thiel was done. He supported these candidates in the primary. He supported J.D. Vance to the tune of $10 million, as you said. But that Thiel was done donating money to candidates in this cycle. I will believe that when I see it. I'm not sure I believe
that.
Yeah,
he's a big, big supporter of Republican candidates.
Yeah, and that money, many believe, along with the endorsement of former President Trump, pushed J.D. Vance over the top to win the primary. You know, it could just be that primary was so bruising that J.D. Vance is letting that settle. Maybe he's working the Ohio Republican Party, trying to get people like Josh Mandel and Matt Dolan and those folks to support him. Mike Gibbons, it was a nasty campaign, Jane Timken. Maybe that's what he's doing. He's been trying to work with those folks to get the Republican Party to fully support him in this campaign.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It could also be that the Trump bump is waning. I mean, Trump endorsed him, which probably put him over the top in that election. And it's been several months since then. We're getting near the end right now of the January 6th House meetings. Maybe the Trump bump doesn't mean as much as it did in April.
Yeah. I mean, he's still a Republican, J.D. Vance, mm-hmm. is, in a very Republican state.
Yeah.
I mean, Trump won by 8 points in 2020. Rob Portman is leaving, but he probably would have easily won re-election. And so Tim Ryan does have a pretty steep hill to climb, and he is going all in, I believe, in this early part of the campaign, the post-primary period, because he needs to stay close in the polls. And the polls we've seen show him close, if not leading in some of them, if you can believe the internal polls that he releases. And he needs to stay close to generate fundraising here in the state of Ohio to show folks he has a chance, and as importantly, if not more importantly, to generate some national buzz and get some national money.
Yeah, in his strategy, he is really going for the working class Trump Republicans. He is really trying to define himself as a moderate. There was an ad recently that was Fox News clips defining him as a moderate.
Yeah, it was just no narration. It was just one clip after the other of Fox News hosts, including Tucker Carlson, basically saying that Tim Ryan is a moderate. He's in the middle. He tries to work with both parties. A very unusual ad, but
he's a Trump Democrat, and he's really leaning into it at this point. And I think it's smart. He's not getting involved in the culture wars. He's just economy, economy, economy. He is Sherrod Brown 2.0, and I think it's smart.
Yeah, I mean, the question is, he has spent, as you said, $10 million already. Is he spending money too early? Will he have enough money for the stretch run from Labor Day till November, when really people do start to pay attention and you need that money to keep the race close? It's a risky strategy, but it probably is the only way he can win, is to portray himself as a conservative Democrat and to get in front of what will be a lot of attack ads, trying to tie him to the defund the police movement, trying to tie him to Nancy Pelosi, and tying him to Joe Biden, whose approval rating is in the low 30s now.
Who, as of this recording, we learned now has COVID, which is unrelated, but a bit of news for us to make, which we don't always do. I'm interested. It's a fascinating race because, again, he is, to me, he's Sherrod Brown 2.0, gray floppy hair and all. I think he's Sherrod Brown, and he has a chance.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the issues, too, that are going to be big issues in this campaign, the economy. But Ryan seems to be running against Washington, against trade deals, particularly running against China, which has drawn some criticism from his own party. Vance can run as the successful businessman who will lower taxes and cut regulation and bring new industry to Ohio. So that's going to be a strong message for J.D. Vance. Then you have the abortion issue. That separates them. Although Ryan did change his position in 2015, and that will be brought up during the campaign. He'll have to explain that again. Guns, you know, Ryan used to have an A rating from the NRA, but now advocates for background checks. Says Sandy Hook changed his mind on that.
Vance has not gone quite as full-throatedly pro-Trump. Has not really, to my knowledge, repeated lies about the 2020 election. He will sort of passively talk about questions surrounding the election, but he's not a full-throated election denier.
But if you're asking,
do you think that hurts him at all? Do you think it benefits him?
Well, he'll be asked point blank, do you think Joe Biden won the election? And he really hasn't answered that. He says, well, there are questions about it. He says Ohio's election was fair. Of course, Trump won in Ohio. But there are questions about other states. So he dances and dodges around the question without full-throatedly saying the election was stolen.
Have they set up debates in this race? I don't know that they have. And I'm interested to see if J.D. Vance and other big-name Republicans do indeed debate.
Oh, I think they have to, at least a couple times.
I don't think they have to. Why would they have to? I mean, because they're so close?
I think that they will debate. They may not debate a lot, but there'll be a couple of debates. I know the Ohio Debate Commission, the fairly newly formed group in the past 3 or 4 years, has got invitations out.
Yeah.
I'm sure media organizations will do the same.
But there's been some debate, pardon the pun, but there's been some debate among Republican leaders about whether they should just skip debates and not be involved with them because they repeat false claims that the debate commissions are against them and that they don't serve their interests.
Yeah, I mean,
it serves the interests of voters for sure. But
I would think, like Mike DeWine, I could see a strategy where he would avoid debating Nan Whaley because we know Mike DeWine. Everyone has made up their mind about Mike DeWine. He doesn't need a debate to introduce himself to voters. J.D. Vance, as well known as he is not Mike DeWine. He still needs to win over some some moderate Republican voters and maybe even some independents to win the race. I would be very surprised if they don't debate. They're both smart men, mm-hmm. good debaters. I don't think that they would be gaffes. I think that they would be informational for voters, and I don't think those folks would shy away. But you never know.
I hope they do. We'll be right back.
You're listening to a WOSU Public Media podcast. Everything you hear is funded by listeners like you. Become a member of WOSU Public Media today and support digital content like Snolly Goster and the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast. Make a gift at WOSU.org.
This is Snolly Goster from WOSU Public Media. Well, voters right now casting ballots for what turned out to be unconstitutional state legislative districts in the delayed primary for Ohio House and Senate candidates. Voters will cast ballots in those unconstitutional districts in the fall, and now we know voters will pick candidates for unconstitutional congressional districts in the fall. So everything's right in the world now, Mike. Everything matches up.
It's really kind of bizarre. But according to the Ohio Supreme Court, every legislative district in Ohio, state and federal, is illegal. The court this week ruled the second congressional map submitted by the Ohio lawmakers unconstitutional and gave lawmakers a total of 2 months to draw another one.
But that timeline ultimately will not matter, at least for this year, because the rejected maps districts are set, as are state legislative districts. The first time they could change is for 2024, and we have now had seven lawmaker maps in Ohio ruled unconstitutional recently.
It's bizarre. I mean, what is the value of an Ohio Supreme Court decision if an entity can just say, yeah, thanks for your opinion, but we're going to do it this way anyway?
It's toothless, and a lot of it, I think, is because the Supreme Court refuses to hold them in contempt of court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are arguments that they can't do that because it's another branch of government, but what's the point?
Then why give them oversight?
Yeah, they don't have oversight. In this case, in the state legislative districts, it was a federal judge that said, look, you got to have an election, so you got to go with this map.
Right.
And then with the congressional map, you know, voting rights groups could have fought more, but they decided to put off the fight until 2024. So I guess that this could have had more of an impact had the voter rights groups fought harder against the congressional districts. But either way, we're voting for districts that are going to last at most one election cycle.
It's really strange. It's really not democratic. It's very voters overwhelmingly approved what they thought were changes meant to limit gerrymandering. And then the Ohio Redistricting Commission just continues giving the middle finger to voters. I mean, they're really just disregarding the will of the people.
Yeah, of course, they argue that to try to make democratic competitive districts, you have to gerrymander the other way. But the numbers tell the story when you have...
It's not a math problem. It's a political problem.
It could be 12 Republican congressional seats to two Democratic ones.
They have computer programs that could do this in a matter of minutes.
Yeah. And there are maps out there that are more representative of Ohio votes in these elections. It really highlights the Supreme Court race that's on the ballot this fall. It'll be a key to this fight. If Republican incumbents Pat DeWine and Pat Fisher win, the court will have a clearer 4-3 Republican majority because Governor DeWine will name the justice to replace either Sharon Kennedy or Jennifer Bruner, who are running for Chief Justice. So the Democrats have to at least pick off one of those two candidates, one of the two Pats, to keep this redistricting fight going in the Ohio Supreme Court. And if not, then it goes back to the ballot, I think, at some point.
It has to go back to the ballot. The system is just not working. I mean, I understand why the League of Women Voters of Ohio and other groups that were involved in the first ballot initiative are letting this first process play out completely. But we're near the end of this process at this point to see how this affected the 2022 election. And it's really disgraceful, and it's really made Ohio a laughingstock when it comes to a lot of election watchers. I saw someone joke on Twitter that... has anyone tried unplugging Ohio and plugging it back in to see if it starts working again?
Yeah. Well, other states have this fight, like New York, but their courts stepped in and made them draw new maps. And when the Democrats tried to rig the system in their favor in New York.
We say it a lot. Democrats do this as well. In New York, Illinois, states that are controlled by Democrats do this crap to.
And in Michigan is the one I think a lot of people are looking at. They did put an independent commission in, and it seems to be working. It's not done yet, but it seems to be doing. It seems to have improved the process and made it more colorblind party-wise than what we're seeing in Ohio and in New York.
Something has to change. Whatever it is, something has to change because, again, I'm not. This is not me advocating for more Democrats. It's just me advocating for representation that actually is reflective of Ohio. And that's not what we're getting with this system.
Yeah, and I think that if supporters are going to get another constitutional amendment passed that has the, say, independent commission, they've got to do it now. It's expensive. They've got to get it on the ballot. They've got to collect a lot of signatures, and the campaign will be expensive. But it's top of mind for voters right now. So if they wait past 2024, I just think that the memories will fade, and they'll lose the moment. So we'll see if they do it. It's going to be an expensive campaign and a hard campaign to win.
Anyway, let's turn now to our Snollygoster of the Week segment. We give that every week to the shrewdest political move or politician of the week. And this week we are giving it to all the Republicans who voted against the marriage equality bill that is now before Congress.
Yeah, it's in the House. It passed the House this week, mainly with Democratic support, but a few Republicans, four Republican congressmen from Ohio actually voted to codify same-sex protection in federal law. Many Republicans who don't necessarily oppose same-sex marriage said that we're not going to vote for this because same-sex marriage is settled law.
Does that make you think of anything in particular?
I don't know what else. What, I'm trying to think. It's a settled law. Who said it was settled law? Oh, Roe versus Wade was settled
that
law.
That was settled law. Obergefell, settled law, right?
That's what they're saying.
Until it's not settled law.
Yeah. So now, to his credit, I guess you could say, Rob Portman, who came out a few years ago in support of gay marriage after his son came out as gay, he not only is supporting the gay marriage bill, he is sponsoring it, co-sponsoring it in the Senate. So they have two votes in the Senate. They need eight more to make it federal law. But to those Republican senators using settled law as cover for not supporting the codification of gay marriage, you get our Snollygoster of the Week Award.
Congrats to you. If you have a suggestion for next week, you can send it to us at snollygoster@wosu.org. As always, be sure to leave us a good review wherever you get your podcasts. And please tell your friends about us. Until next week, for our audio producer, Eric French, and our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.